On this episode of The Odd Windbags, we talk about how Josh McDaniels has embraced the dark side, how the offense has been trashed by the ringer, how Aaron Rodgers already wants Devontae Adams back, and all the great news of Raiders coming back from injury. And we love when you subscribe, rate, and comment on whatever platform you're listening on. All right, here we go.
I got a dream of winning a Super Bowl. I got a dream of being in a Pro Bowl. I'm really not into dreams anymore, okay? I'm into nightmares.
Caught! Touchdown! Raiders!
You're listening to the Autumn Windbags, an audio attack from the Silver and Black. Here are your windbags, RJ Clifford and Juan Soto.
Yeah, it is another episode of the Autumn Windbags. RJ Clifford, Juan Soto, let's have some fun today. We got real late in our countdown, but we are just 24 days away. From Raiders opening day. Raiders, Rams, SoFi. Basically a home game. 24 days away.
I was listening to this sports show this morning, and they were talking about all the Chargers this, the Chargers that. And one of the hosts was like, whoa. Let's have them have a home game against the Raiders first. And then we can start talking about them having L.A.
Yeah.
And I don't think truer words were ever spoken.
It's nice that we got two games in SoFi. So because, you know, normally it's AFC got 9 home games last season. And then now the AFC gets 8 home games this season. Two games at SoFi means that we get 10 home games this season, which is nice. 8 at Allegiant and 2 at our summer home, which I'll take.
All day, every day.
Not bad.
All day, every day.
24 days away. Can't wait. So in 24 days, the question of the day, and this is the question that we posted pinned at top of the comment section. Curious what you guys think. This is Rory's thing that he gets all hot and bothered about.
Dude.
Should Hunter Renfro return punts for the Raiders? I think he's the best punt returner that we have, not only in returning the ball, but he also basically plays a safety. Right? Like we saw last season.
Bone crushing safety.
Like who's going to try to do a fake punt against the Raiders knowing what Hunter Renfro is capable of back then. So not only is he's got like that wiggle.
He's like Ed Reed back there. Yards. Like yeah. Ed Reed back there. Just throw.
Like he's got the wiggle that's going to get us all those extra yards and he'll stop fake punts.
Yeah. He lays the thunder.
He's the perfect guy. So because Rory was so adamant about it on your guys' show, the Vikings post show, he's like, hey, we need to do a poll question for this. And some surprising results. Should Hunter Renfro return punts for the Raiders this season? 15% of you, only 15% of you, want to take punt return seriously. 85% of you voters said, no, it's not worth the injury risk. That's bonkers to me. You want the ball in the hands of your best players as often as possible.
Yeah, it's not like he's Tim Brown or anything like that, right? Like, let's just slow down for a second.
Even
is he a nice player?
The hands of your best players as often as possible.
Even Tim Brown went back there every now and then and returned punts later in his career when he was already established as one of the league's best receivers. Mm-hmm. Look, let's not get ahead of ourselves. Is Hunter Renfro a good player for us? Is he one of the best slot receivers for us? Yes. Is he like irreplaceable? No. Do I want to lose him? I'm not saying it's okay if we lose him. I'm not saying that. But you can't treat him like you treat Devontae Adams. You would have put Devontae Adams because he's fucking Devontae Adams. Hunter Renfro is not Devontae Adams.
To me, all that's irrelevant. It's like, all right, well, so, okay. So we're always like, hey, I don't want Hunter Renfro to get hurt. So let's not have him do punt returns. It's like, okay, well, let's not have him play the first half of every game because we don't want him to get hurt. Let's only throw him the ball 3 times a game because if we throw it to him more, there's a chance he's going to get hurt. It's like, it's a rabbit hole that you're just going down that leads nowhere. Like, if you're going to treat guys like Fabergé eggs, then do it all the time. Don't be like, oh, so now he's not going to run slants? Now we're going to have him, you know, run across the middle where a safety can blast him? We're not, you know, like, it's like, where are we going with this? Like, they're there to play football. Yes, there is an injury risk. When he's returning punts, he might get hurt. There's an injury risk when he's running a screen. There's an injury risk when he's blocking. There's an injury risk. All the, there's an injury risk when he takes a dump. Like, there's an injury risk everywhere. But you want, like, if you treat these guys like Fabergé eggs, then you're not playing football.
Yeah, you know, you can really blow out an O-ring if you push too hard.
It's happened.
It's rough. It's rough.
It's happened.
Business. Yeah.
And it's if you treat special teams like a throwaway, nothing play. Hey, let's just throw a third string corner back there. Let's not even care about it. Let's not worry about injuries. Then those are the results you're going to get. Those are the results we're going to get. When's the last time we returned a punt for a touchdown? Like it's been a while.
6 years or something like that. It's been a long time.
How about we get some special teams points?
I think it was Cordarrelle Patterson, I think, was the last guy to do it or something like that.
Johnny Lee Higgins or something? Like,
yeah, that was a long ass time ago. It's been that was a like while. 14 or 15.
It's been a while. Like, let's commit to it. Like, he's already proven he's great at it. Let's commit to it.
Johnny Lee Higgins, where are you at? Drop us a line.
What a great name in the history
Johnny
of
Johnny Lee Higgins.
Johnny Lee.
I remember, I think he did it against the Chiefs, and then he did like that cartwheel at the end. Oh, it was so dope.
It's the name of a dude who sounds like he was like an assassin in the 1800s.
Johnny Lee Higgins. He sounds like he's
like he was John Wilkes Booth's backup. You know,
he sounds like he's a ghostwriter for like the country music to the stars. You know what I'm saying? Johnny Lee Higgins.
So that's your question of the day. I know you guys know, but I genuinely want to know what you guys think. Like, obviously, you know where I feel. You know how Soto feels. Like, I feel like we can put our thoughts into your brain harder because 85% of you think you shouldn't. It's like, have him sit on the bench until playoffs because we don't want him to get hurt.
Yeah, guys. Don't let him get hurt. Like, when it comes to wide receiver positions, the slot position is the most dangerous one. He's the guy that's doing all the over the middle shit. He's the guy that's closer to the big linebackers. That is the tougher position and the more physical position as far as the hits go. And I think he does a good job. Hummer does a good job of, you know, getting down and not taking a direct hit. And he's gotten a lot better, especially this last season, not taking that big hit in punt return as well. So, I mean, I would rather have the field position.
Yeah. How about some special teams yards and some points instead of, that 3% chance he might get hurt. Like, no, let's put the ball in the hands of our best players as possible. So question of the day, should Hunter Renfrow return punts for the Raiders? Down in the comments section, we'll pin it. Let us know. So you had a... when we're making our rundown, there's one topic that you put in there. There's some because I basically built it. I had free time today and hit all the normal stuff, which we'll get to, all the moves that have been made, Davante Adams stuff, Aaron Rodgers stuff, injury returns, all the standard stuff that you and I both knew we were talking about already put in there. But you put in one thing, and you put it in with some gusto. And the title is Josh McDaniels Has Embraced the Dark Side. So this is a quote from our head coach, Josh McDaniels. This is in the post-Vikings game presser. And he said, I've been around a lot of preseason games over 22 years, and I don't remember one feeling like this. I would just say that the reception from our fans, getting to know Raider Nation the way that you see them now, it's just different. I've competed against them a handful of times in my time in the NFL. But now to kind of be on the same side, you understand why it is what it is. I'm lucky and blessed to be the head coach here. That is the best atmosphere in a preseason game that I've ever been a part of. And that's easy to say that, clearly. I can't wait to play another time in here, then get to the regular season and have the opportunity to do it for real in regular games. Just what a great, passionate fan base to have, and to have the girls here and my son on the sideline. It was a special day. So this one hit you, Soto. Why?
You know, it goes to show that not all about the Raiders is thugs and criminals and beating people up and doing all that stuff. Don't get me wrong. That's a part of it, but that's a part of any fan base. I don't know that I've been to any NFL game. I went to a Houston Texans. I think they were playing the Jags. One year when I was traveling for work, and dude, there was a lot of fights. I mean, people talk shit on our Dodgers too. And I went to a White Sox game at Comiskey Park, and let me tell you, there was a lot of fights there. Yeah. Mostly White Sox fans against White Sox fans. So, it's good to be recognized by someone in our organization who can speak with some weight and be recognized for something that's not a negative connotation of a Raider fan. To be known, to be recognized for something that's positive and something that we bring. And I mean, he came from a fan base that was, you know, pretty vocal, pretty excitable with New England.
It's
and
a spoiled fan base with
a lot of winning
Super Bowl rings.
A lot of winning, yeah, a lot of winning. But to come here and to just feel that passion, like you can tell when people are cheering for you because you're winning, or people that really cheer for you because they love it. And that's what he felt there. You can't fake it. And you know, I think that it goes to show that what we have built as Raider fans, it is something that's real and something that you can definitely, it's tangible.
So, I know this to be true. You know this to be true. Every Raider fan knows this to be true, that it's a passionate and unique fan base, right?
Well,
very different. But I'm wondering, is McDaniels just pandering, or did he actually see it in a preseason game? Because as we've learned this last season, that Raiders home games can be wishy-washy.
A little hit and miss,
right? A lot of out-of-town fans, which makes sense, right? Vegas.
Fans. Yeah.
Who want, you know, traveling to Cleveland or Jacksonville or Pittsburgh, if you're out of your, you know, out of your team's market, not that appealing. Going to Vegas, everyone wants to. Every single fan base is like, oh, Vegas? We're in. Great. That's our away game this year. No brainer, right? That was like me with Nashville. Like, I already bought my tickets. I'm going week three, see the Titans. My sister lives out there. I love Nashville. Perfect away game to go to, right? That's everybody else for Las Vegas. So I'm wondering if Josh McDaniels truly did get the correct and true and genuine Raider Nation experience at an Allegiant Stadium preseason contest.
I'm telling you, man, Rory and I talked about it in the postgame show. It was loud. It was loud there. So I don't know. He very well may have. You know, if you're going to go to a preseason NFL game, you're either a diehard fan.
That's a good point.
You know,
maybe that's the only time you're going to get a truly diehard fan base is at a preseason game.
Yeah. Yeah. You're going to get diehard fans. Yeah. But man, I'm telling you, it was rocking in that stadium. You can hear the difference between that game and, you know, the other preseason games out there. And you know, the fact that he mentioned his kids, being there and his kids, you know, maybe experiencing something like that. I mean, because his kids are pretty young. Maybe they didn't really fully comprehend what was going on in New England. Mm-hmm. But, you know, maybe his son hit up the little club part there on the field and got a stripper dance or something. I don't know. Who knows?
That'll put a smile on his son's face.
Ah, God. That's what I would want. If I was like one of those Make-A-Wish kids, I'd be like, you know what? That money that you were gonna fly some random, like, freaking athlete to come see me? No.
I got seven of John Cena's signatures. No, thank you.
I don't know. Thank you, John Cena. I appreciate what you do. But
send me the little darlings in Vegas. That'd be much more appreciated.
That'll work out.
And also such a big part, because like really all the Raiders have had the last 20 years, like, you know, a rough couple decades for the Raiders has been the history, right? Because like when the Raiders aren't winning, then we look back to when we were and our fan base and our tradition and all that makes us unique, right? And so that's been something that kind of people have clung to for the Raiders during the off seasons, during the rough seasons. And so I feel like he's kind of like, all right, that's what I got to cling to now until we start winning, right? Like that's all Josh McDaniels has to go on is the fan base and the tradition until he gets this team winning again. And that's on him, right? He's like, all right, I've got this great foundation. This team's got a great background, a rabid fan base, a new city, brand new stadium, an owner that gave me the keys. I got to pick my GM. I got a Pro Bowl quarterback that's under contract. I got the best receiver in football, amazing defensive ends. Like, I got all this shit, right? I got a whole foundation and history behind it. Now it's looking forward. No more looking backward, only looking forward.
Yeah, I think that the fan base, he's not coming into a situation where most new head coaches are coming into, where the fan base maybe is a little bit disgruntled. Yeah. You know, fan base is a little bit disgruntled. Maybe they're a little bit gun shy. They're a little, you know, they got a little PTSD on them. Mm. No matter how much negative happens to us Raiders, we're always going to be out there and cheering for our team. Yeah, and I think that kind of motivates, gives a little bit of extra push to the players and to the coaching staff when it's time to put it on the field.
So the Ringer ranked the offenses of all 32 NFL teams. Mm-hmm. And it's an interesting process. They used a lot of different variations, right? Like, they looked at like the standard issue stuff, your quarterback, your receivers, your personnel in general, the changes to your franchise, the coaches, the coordinators, all sorts of different things. And they focused on different things to rank them. The AFC West came out shining. Even without Tyreek Hill, they ranked the The Kansas City Chiefs number one offense in the NFL. The Los Angeles Chargers, number three offense in the NFL. The Denver Broncos, who haven't had a good offense since Elway, number seven, the seventh best offense in football. And you think, oh, well, they love the AFC West. Where are the Raiders ranked? 13th. Yeah. 13th. Six spots behind the Broncos. Behind the goddamn donkeys. The Raiders, lucky number 13. And this is the reason why they went with 13. Because this is nuts, right? We were a top 10 offense last season without Davante Adams, without Henry Ruggs, with Darren Waller missing five or six games, with our head coach and offensive coordinator getting fired five games into the season. We were still a top 10 offense, and we're better now. So you think, oh, they got to rank us higher. Nope, they rank us lower, and this is why. The writer put a huge amount of emphasis on Josh McDaniels, the new head coach and offensive coordinator. And here's a graph acknowledging when Josh McDaniels was offensive coordinator or head coach without Tom Brady. 2008, his quarterback was Matt Castle. They were 7th in DVOA. 2009, Broncos with Kyle Orton, 18th. 2010, Broncos, Kyle Orton, 17th. 2011, Rams with Sam Bradford, last. 2020, Pats, Cam Newton, 23rd. 2021, Pats, Mac Jones, 10th. And according to this writer, he's looking at this as a negative. He says, as you can see, the results have been mixed. And as with everything in football, a lot comes down to the quarterback. Derek Carr has had 8 seasons as a starter. Only twice has he led a top 10 offense. Now he has a great set of weapons, blah, 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 blah. And he said, if you handed this offensive personnel to McVay or Reed or Sean Payton, it'd probably easily be a top 10 unit. This graph right here of those 6 teams that McDaniels didn't have Tom Brady, that should be proof of his genius as an offensive coordinator, not a knock. He had an average offense with Kyle Orton. An average offense with Kyle Orton. A top 10 offense with a rookie in Mac Jones. 7th ranked offense with Matt Castle, a backup. And you're trying to tell me this is why he's going to fail? Because when he doesn't have Tom Brady, his offenses are average? When he has trash quarterbacks, his offense is average? What?
Really, it doesn't make sense, man.
What?
Look, here's the issue that I have with this entire thing. he looks at basically the quarterback as to why he's as low as he is. Okay, mm-hmm. fine. Who has he had on here that's been anything? Nobody, right? Okay, Matt Castle was a third-year player who had never seen the field.
Yeah.
Okay. Kyle Orton should have been a career backup, and he had freaking Tebow there as well.
Yep.
Sam Bradford was coming off of a shoulder injury. He was shot, right? And the Rams had already given up, basically, on their head coach.
Yep.
Okay. Cam Newton, we this saw Cam Newton gone. Already.
2011 doesn't count.
Yeah. Cam Newton, he couldn't beat out Sam Darnold. You know, he came in when Sam Darnold got hurt, and then he went back to the bench. He can't throw. He has no job right now because his shoulder is shot as well. He can't throw. Mac Jones was a rookie, and with no discernible weapons to speak of, was, I think, sixth in the league in scoring and 10th in DVOA. So I think what they're doing is they're putting too much emphasis on the lack of Brady and not enough emphasis on what he does have in Las Vegas. Because what he does have right now in Las Vegas is better than anything you see on there.
Yeah.
Any situation that you see on that board is he has a better situation now.
And is there no just like acknowledgement that most of this offense is from last season, that through all the shit they went through, they were still a top 10 offense? All that shit they went through. Like, Renfro's only going to be better. Waller's only going to be better. Carr's in his prime. Yeah, the best receiver in football now. Jacobs is still so young, he's not like worn down, even though he has injury history. He's not, you know, like a beat up or shot. Like, I don't understand this. It's like you're only looking at it through the most negative prism of Josh McDaniel's history. That's the only way you're gauging this offense is purely through what Josh McDaniels has done with quarterbacks in the past. And even if you're viewing it through that lens, that should make you be stoked for this offense, not knock it.
Yeah, I think maybe Josh Dubow wrote this for The Ringer because he's looking at it at the most negative light you can put on. And even then, it's still 13. It's mm-hmm. not like 18 or 22, right? The last time Josh McDaniels had a receiver like Devontae Adams, Randy Moss was catching like 25 touchdown passes in a year.
Yeah.
Okay? When he's had a slot receiver like Renfro, you had Welker and Edelman catching 100 balls or more consistently every single season. When he's had a tight end like Gronk or like Waller, he had Gronk and Aaron Hernandez, and they were just dominating the league at their position. When you give him those pieces, he knows what to do with them, and he has a more than capable quarterback who's shown that given pieces around him, he can put up big numbers.
Derek Carr is three times the quarterback of anyone on this list.
At the time, yes.
Cam Newton was shot. Mac Jones, rookie. Orton, career backup. Like,
Castle,
these are all trash quarterbacks. And he's still got good production out of all of them almost. Now you've got you have a good quarterback in his prime that's already in rhythm with his team.
Dude,
his
tight ends last year caught 11 red zone touchdowns.
Mm-hmm.
9 for Hunter Henry, and Jonnu Smith had 2. It's like, what the hell? He knows how to freaking put the ball in the end zone. He knows how to do it. He knows how to get Edelman was always scoring a lot of touchdowns. Welker was always scoring a lot of touchdowns. It's just I don't understand it, man. I honestly don't get it. I understand. But the thing is, if he didn't have the situation he has now, I understand where they would be going. Okay, without Brady, he hasn't been great or whatever. Mm-hmm. But it's like I said, it's the whole Josh Dubow. Don't look at this. Look at this over here.
He's squeezed as much juice out of these oranges as possible. Mac Jones leading a top 10 offense as a rookie?
Dude, okay.
With those weapons? Come on.
DVOA is one thing, but when you're scoring the sixth most points, I think it was maybe even fifth, most points in the league, you have to have some pretty high-scoring games.
Yeah.
And I think one of the Dolphins was one of them. They scored like 50 almost, 40-something. And then one of the Jets games they scored a ton of points too. But what? You still have to score those points. Yeah. With what? What did he have that he was scoring all those points? Like, this dude, he has a freaking sack of freaking nuts and bolts that he had.
Is it better quarterback than all those guys at the time? Better weapons than all those guys at the time? Everything.
It just doesn't make sense.
It makes
man.
No sense. It makes no sense at all.
Ringer, you can ring on this.
Speaking of those great weapons, news alert, breaking news. Aaron Rodgers can be a whiny bitch sometimes.
Maybe.
Here's Aaron Rodgers during the offseason, just recently this week, talking about his receivers. The young guys, especially young receivers, we've got to be way more consistent. A lot of drops, a lot of bad route decisions, running the wrong route. We've got to get better in that area. Can you imagine Derek Carr coming down on his receivers like that? I mean, he's had some trash weapons in his career. Oh. Way worse than Aaron Rodgers. And you never heard Derek Carr come down on his teammates this way.
Yeah. You know, I'm not saying that it's good or bad, because I had no problem with Divine Diablo last year basically calling out the linebacker core, Corey Littleton, that they needed to be better. And he was a rookie. I didn't give a shit. I thought it was, hey, man, he's out there too. It's not like he's on the sidelines telling you have to be better. He's out there getting himself in the mix too. I have no problem what he said. I just think it's hilarious that, you know, he misses Davante Adams that bad. And maybe he has some reservations or some, regret about how he handled things. And caused Davante Adams to want to leave, because, you know, and it's similar thing to the Chiefs, you know. We got a great quarterback, this and that, blah, blah, blah. I'm not saying that Mahomes and Rodgers aren't great elite quarterbacks, but, you know, you got to throw to somebody. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's that little extra that those receivers – Hill and Adams, that they can do for a quarterback to make them look even better. As good as they are, they make them look even better. And when you don't have that, you know, don't it always seem to go? You don't know what you got till it's gone.
I just wanted to send this out to every single person, every single media member, every single person on Twitter, every blogger that was like, oh yeah, Davante Adams is going to miss Aaron Rodgers more than Aaron Rodgers misses Davante Adams.
Nope.
No effing way. We're 1 week into the preseason, and already Aaron Rodgers is like, these receivers, they just got to be better. They just, I just can't do my thing unless I'm throwing to all pros. And Carr's like, I've been throwing to trash for like 6 of my 9 seasons. Like, welcome to the club, Aaron. Like, you're the 2-time MVP. You make them better. You're, was he the second highest paid quarterback in football? Whatever
now
he is,
yeah.
You make them better. That's your job. Your job is to make them better, right? He's going to miss Davante Adams so bad this season. He was spoiled by Davante.
Even if Davante, which more than likely his numbers are going to slip, Davante Adams knows going into the season, wow, we have a lot more weapons on this team than I've ever had, than I've ever played with, okay? Yeah. So he knows for a fact, well, I won't say for a fact, but he has a good idea that his numbers, his production – may slip, but the overall offense will be better. And I don't know that any of that slippage is going to be because of the quarterback, because we've all known when Derek Carr likes you, when he feels comfortable with you, he has no problems feeding you the ball. So it's not going to be for lack of targets or lack of looks. It's just going to be that there's so many other targets out there for us to be able to move the ball. On the other end, if Aaron Rodgers' numbers dip, it's going to be directly because he doesn't have Davante Adams. It's not going to be, well, you know, Davante Adams' numbers dip because it's Derek Carr. It's not Aaron Rodgers. That's not going to be the case whatsoever. It's because he's going into a much better offensive situation as far as talent-wise around him than he had in Green Bay.
Aaron Rodgers truly was spoiled by Devontae Adams. Like the Tape Don't Lie guys did a really good job of looking back at some of the, you know, the Rodgers to Adams games. And like Adams is open every single play.
Like that's dumb. It's dumb how he can get open on everybody.
That's why Aaron Rodgers can be so conservative and be so safe with the ball, because he's like, oh, Devontae Adams is only 27% covered. I'm going to throw it away. I'm going to wait till he's 3% covered or wide open, because he can do that all the time. Oh, I want a perfect 50-50 ball, right? Like he's not going to force stuff where it doesn't need to be, because he knows that Devontae's going to be open next play, right? Whereas Derek Carr's like, oh, you know, Zay Jones is my number one. Waller's hurt. Ruggs is in jail. Oh, I'm just going to throw it and hope I get a PI, because I have no other choice. I have no other options. I have to literally reinvent football to move the chains. And he did. Whereas Aaron Rodgers can just be like, all right, I'm just going to wait till Devontae Adams just Adams the shit out of this cornerback and then just throw it to a wide open wide receiver. Like, welcome to real football, Aaron Rodgers. Good luck.
Welcome to life without one of the best receivers in the league.
You think Rodgers was a whiny bitch with the best receiver in football? Wait till he doesn't have the best receiver in football.
Bro, and the stuff he's saying, it's not just one thing. It's like a bunch of stuff. Mm-hmm. Drops, bad decisions, wrong routes. Like, that's pretty much all you can do.
Stuff most wide receivers do.
It happens.
Other than like the really good Pro Bowlers, that's what a lot of wide receivers do. Drop balls, don't run the right routes, don't read the defense. Normal stuff for most NFL wide receivers.
Someone who's as image conscious as Aaron Rodgers is, him not having that elite season and him feeling that it's because he has inferior talent at wide receiver, he's not going to want to play that much longer. Like, oh, these guys are making me look
bad. I feel like that's why Devontae saw the writing on the wall. He's like, I'm going to get out now because I think you're bouncing soon, Aaron. And yeah. I'm not going to risk my prime years on a maybe, on a question mark. Like, I'm going to Vegas. I'm going to play with my boy Derek.
DC.
I'm so glad he did. Well, in good news, we just did a video last week about how the Raiders had like 12 like solid dudes not practicing. And because Josh McDaniels is so tight-lipped about injuries and stuff, we're not sure if it's like pure injury, just holding him out, personal reasons, massive injury, minor injury, being cautious. Like, we had no idea, right? And of course, that led to people hypothesizing, oh, Waller's holding out. Like, every single goddamn offseason, people hypothesize Waller's holding out, even though every single bit of evidence that comes out of his mouth and his actions say he's not. But the good news is, almost all those really important players return to practice via The Athletic. Wednesday, the night that we're recording this, a bunch of training camp guys returned. Darren Waller, Dylan Stoner, Jonathan Hankins, Bilal Nichols, two big ones that were on the pup list. Mm-hmm. Divine Diablo, potential starter, probably starter. Trayvon Mullen, Rock Ya-Sin, probably are two starting cornerbacks. So of the... Of the seven people that returned, we got arguably our best offensive weapon, second best offensive weapon, our two starting defensive tackles, potentially, arguably a starting linebacker, and probably our two starting cornerbacks. Came back today. This is magical news. It was too early in the preseason to think like, oh man, is Diablo going to be out for this season? Is Mullen going to be out for this season? It was too early, but with a brand new defensive coordinator, Ya-Sin being obviously brand new to the team, Diablo being a second year player, Waller's injury history, like the sooner these guys got back to work, the better. And this was the best news I could think of when I was scrolling through my Raiders news this afternoon.
Yeah, man, the big ones, the D tackles back from the pup list.
Mm-hmm.
Also Mullen back on from the pup list. It's starting to look up. So we had some reservations, Rory and I did, about how poor the middle of our defense looked, the middle of our defensive line looked, mm-hmm. and also some missed tackles in the secondary. And those two areas were addressed with
these returning players. Injuries are going to hit everybody. Anybody who does anything in a season is going to be healthy. That's one of the things that, you know, is like, the, you know, they just didn't have that huge injury, you know, or they had just one guy go down, but they were able to have another guy step up. And when you get a lot of these players back, especially when you saw how needy that group was, it's very positive, because now what you're doing is those guys that were in the first quarter against, or the first half probably, against the Vikings, they were doing pretty good until the third stringers came in. Well, guess what? Those third stringers were looking like they were going to be second stringers if the starters weren't going to be in. Mm-hmm. Well, now they're not going to play. Now the guys that played pretty good, those are backups to the guys that are actually going to start. So I'm feeling a lot better about the interior of our defensive line, because Hankins is, you know, he's you know, a little older, right? He's probably in his late 20s, maybe around there. I think Bilal Powell is what, 26?
Nichols?
He's young. He's a breed. Yeah. Oh, Nichols, excuse me. Powell. Bilal Powell is a running back from the Jets.
He's 25.
25. Yeah, young guy still. And he's not the biggest guy, but he's quick. He can get out there. And I'm itching to see them, because honestly, look, especially in this division, you have to put pressure up the middle against these quarterbacks, because they're so used to stepping up in the pocket, against edge pressure. They're just, especially,
too good.
They're too good. And especially freaking, Russell Wilson. He's a little bit shorter guy. If you can get pushed those offensive linemen back into him, you saw it in Seattle when his line got poorer and poorer as the years went along. It was a little bit tougher for him to do what he needed to do. So that up the middle pressure is going to be huge, and getting these two guys back is big. I was super excited when I read this.
The two big ones for me were obviously Darren Waller. With his injury history last season and him missing this time, it's like, ooh, how reoccurring is this? Now it's a hamstring. Last season, it was, remember that combination of like knee, back.
It was all the same thing. It was the IT band injury.
You're getting all these just smoke and mirrors out of him. So him being out there is great. And of course, the Trayvon Mullen Jr., we found out the only reason we knew he was injured is because he's a kid in his early 20s, so he has to Instagram story every second of his life. Like every dump he takes, he has to document it. So we found out that he had foot surgery in March. We're just like, wait, what? We had no idea. And foot surgery, you're moving a canker sore, or are you replacing your ankle? Nobody knew. And of course, no one in the Raiders are gonna tell us. So those two guys coming back were the biggest for me, because those are the two starters and the two biggest question marks.
You know, I really want to see them play together, man. I would love to see this starting group in this third game for us. Just throw them out there for a series, just to kind of let them see. Because I know that against the Dolphins, they're going to do some inter-team practices, right? Combined team practices, and they're going to do it against the Patriots as well. So I understand that the coaching staff usually puts more into that, because they're able to do, full ones-on-ones in a more controlled setting. So much controlled as, a lot of times, you see, let's say Josh McDaniels is going to give Bill Belichick the plays they're going to run, just so they can get the right formations put up and they can sync the right personnel to the plays. And that's more of a test to them in their eyes. But I would really love to see these ones play with each other, just so we're not so biting our nails for that first game. Because that happened to us last year. We're like, dude, how are they going to look? How is this new defense going to look when they're all out there playing? And
if you remember last season, that's when we first kind of felt like we had something going, when we scrimmaged the Rams, and we had some like
the Rams.
Renfro was like burning motherfuckers, like guys were getting in fights. We were like winning some of these battles. You're like, damn, Rams are gonna be legit. Well, we're hanging with the Rams.
They were a world champ, and the Rams even said it, like, dude, these guys are gonna be good.
Yeah,
these guys are gonna be good.
That's when it felt real.
Yeah.
The Raiders made some big moves in the last couple days. We're not gonna go over all of them, because most of them you don't care about at all. But there was three moves that piqued my interest. DeMarcus Robinson cut. A little surprising. I thought for sure he'd make the roster. We were arguing like, oh, is he gonna be the number three receiver behind Hunter Renfro and Devontae? Like, is he the Z, right? Or
next.
Is he the SWAT or the slot? Whatever. Yeah. He'd be the number three receiver, right? We thought, like, there's a good chance he's the number three receiver. Cut. Vernon Butler in a position that we really need. Cut. And then Tyree Gillespie, we traded to the Titans that we're going to play in week three. He was a fourth round pick last season for us, and we traded him for a conditional 2024 seventh round pick.
Good God.
Which one of those three do you want to tackle first?
Let's tackle DeMarcus Robinson because I have an interesting take on that.
I can't wait to hear it.
I don't know that the terminology that we're using now is going to be the same terminology that we use moving forward.
Okay.
I think that because of the likelihood, it's a few factors. Number one, the likelihood of DeMarcus Robinson making the roster, given what they've seen in practice and during the games, probably wasn't very high. Mm. If he's cut, the likelihood that he maybe go back to his old team, which is the Chiefs, maybe we were looking at it like, hey, you know, some of this terminology may change moving forward, and we don't want him to be around for this new terminology if we're going to end up probably cutting him anyway. And then he goes back over to his old team.
Because it was really early to cut him.
Yeah. Like, that's why I'm thinking.
Like, we still have like Justin Hall and Isaiah Zuber and Chris Lacy on our roster.
That's what
right?
I'm saying is I don't know that they wanted him in there to learn that new terminology or the actual final terminology that we're going to use, especially wide receiver wise. That's why I think that one was done right now. And maybe as a favor, like, hey man, you're not going to make this team, but you know, let me get you early so you can go out and find something else.
So I have a bunch of thoughts on this. One, it's
what
so
are
crazy.
They, RJ?
It's so crazy how we're like dropping like a dude that could probably start on half the NFL teams at wide receiver, like a, you know, good chunk of NFL teams. We're cutting him halfway through August. We have wide receivers pouring out our ears, and we still can't field one decent right tackle. It's like, can't we just turn like three wide receivers into one good right tackle? What if you could do that in football?
Just put two together and say they weigh about one right tackle.
Just like a three-legged race. Just like tie them together and you can be one right tackle, right? Like, I wish
like,
that was
like
the case.
What was that called? A Voltron? Like
something
all the
like that.
Little tigers came together to make that big robot?
That would be amazing. Another part is it really is going to show what Josh McDaniels is looking for in wide receivers. It's like, we don't want just like a guy who's a six across the board or a seven across the board. Like, you got to do something special for us. And so guys that maybe aren't as good of a true wide receiver as Robinson are going to make the squad because they're amazing on special teams or they're not afraid to block downfield or whatever. Right. Like, maybe because like we don't, it feels so weird saying this. We're not really in a need of like a semi-good true wide receiver. We've got pass catchers all over the place. Devontae Adams, Hunter Renfro, Darren Waller, Foster Moreau, like three or four running backs that can all catch the ball. It's like, we don't really need just kind of a wide receiver. We need a Tyron Johnson who's going to stretch the field, right? We need a
DJ Turner, same thing.
Yeah, a Mac Hollins, who's just giants, right? They got like body dudes, like, you know, and the, you know, knock on wood, like Devontae Adams goes down or something, Mac Hollins can kind of fill that role a little, right? He can do some of the things that Devontae does. Like, we don't need just a
guy. You don't need just a guy.
You don't need
a jag.
Body, you know,
let's call him a jag. Just a guy. He's just a guy.
Yeah.
Well, look, the thing is, too, is I was talking to Rory about this. If you're going to be a backup or like one of the rounding out the roster kind of guys, you have to bring something special. It's like, you don't have to be great across the board, but one thing that you do has to be something that can be capitalized on. And we talk about Tyron Johnson. He's really fast. He can get open and he can stretch the field. DJ Turner, similar to that. Mac Hollins is a big possession receiver. So those are the things. Keelan Cole is kind of a mix of all three. So once you get further down the roster, you don't need overall, like, okay, yeah, because you're not going to get like a BB plus on everything when you get down to like your fifth and sixth receiver. They're going to be like C's on everything, or maybe a C plus or a B minus on something else. You need one of those things to be really good, and that can help. If someone goes down, you can take advantage of that one thing. And I don't know that DeMarcus Robinson really had that in him, because he's not super fast. He's got decent hands, you know. He dropped the ball, I think, this last game. I don't know, man. He just was a guy. Just a guy. He's a Jag.
Vernon Butler, in a position we needed. It kind of goes to show that that's how badly we needed bodies there, when they're like, eh, we need bodies there. But it also means that we're probably getting back Hankins, Nichols, if they're willing to, you know, cut ties with Butler.
Yeah, Hankins and Nichols, definitely. Because, look, like I talked about when we talked about Ndamukong Suh, the thing that gave me pause for concern was how many people we signed for that position, and we used a lot of draft capital on that specific position. So you have the two young guys that you just drafted. Those guys are going to probably be on either on the team or in the mix. You have Vickers, who has been playing really well, and you have two guys coming off the PUP list who obviously wasn't that huge of a concern, their injuries, because there's not much of a concern going forward with injuries, for, you know, lingering injuries, I should say, with Powell. Nichols. I will tell myself, don't say Powell. And I said Powell again with Nichols and Hankins. So they're back.
What was that line from Family Guy when he's getting interviewed on the job, Peter Griffin, and he sees the picture of like the guy that's interviewing him, and there's the picture, and it's the wife and like the kids, and the wife's like smoking hot. And the interviewer's like, so where do you see yourself in 5 years? And Peter goes, Don't say doing your wife. Doing your son.
That's what happened to me right now.
Yeah.
So Bilal Nichols and Hankins coming back, I think that gives us, you know, that with Vickers and the two rookies that we had, that's already five guys for a defensive tackle position. I think that's
probably, this is just a great sign. That just means that the guys that were on PUP are coming back. That's what that means. We're good to me. Go. It's not. Yep. And then Gillespie, which was it was surprising when I saw it, but then when I kind of did the math in my head afterwards, it wasn't quite as surprising. I mean, he was a guy drafted in the fourth round last season, old regime. He played like 12 defensive snaps all last season, injured, didn't really like show anything in training camp, it seems. So I feel like Nick Ziegler's like, all right, let's just get something out of this guy, right? Like, he's still so young where one of these other 31 other NFL teams can be like, all right, I think we can work with this guy. We can find something out if he's got it. Let's just get something out of him. And the safety situation, not as bad as maybe we thought. Like Merrick, Abram, like Teamer, Harmon, that's probably going to be our four safeties.
Yeah.
So why hang on to these dudes longer than we need to if we can get some trade value out of them?
Yeah, I mean, look, in the seventh round pick, is that something that's going to be like, I mean, it could be a sixth round pick if Gillespie balls out for the freaking Titans. Mm-hmm. But is that going to be something that's going to be like, oh, wow, you know, a seventh round pick, we're going to get a really good guy? No. But let's say you want to move up in the fourth round to grab somebody. You give them your fourth and a seventh. That usually makes things work. So those seventh, late round picks, six, seven round pick, you can use those to move up and down along with your pick in that round. So it's just capital for you to be able to move around and be more flexible when you find a guy that's close to you that you want to run up and get.
Ready to do some What Up Winbacks?
You know it.
So if you want to be on What Up Winbacks, leave a comment down below on any video. We go through every single comment. We don't reply to every one of them because Lord knows we're not really that busy. We probably could if we wanted to. We're just that lazy. But we read every one of them. We
put the best ones in What Up Winbacks. Best word.
Frank Sharp chimes in. And this was on the video of how the reports are like Max Crosby's completely unblockable right now. Frank Sharp said, all they got to do is hold him and the refs won't throw any flags.
I mean, can't argue with that.
Can't argue with that. Is there any chance, any hope? Am I just being overly optimistic that the Mick Ziegler regime will get some respect out of the refs? Was it just because, like, Gruden was so bad at reviews? He was, like, just so emotional on the sideline. Does McDaniels have, like, some savvy, some suave, some experience? So maybe the refs stop donkey punching us every game?
Yeah, I think that's the bigger thing is the head coach massaging the refs. I think, you know, our boy Gruden was a little bit more combative.
You think?
Yeah. Then maybe you would want, if you're going to massage a call from a ref. I think that the stigma of being on one of the least penalized teams in the league coming over, you see it already. I mean, look, you can call a lot of fouls, a lot of penalties in a game. It's just whether you choose to or not. And a lot of the times it's going to be reputation, not just of the player, but of the coaching staff. And also how the head coach kind of, like I said, massages the ref, the situation. And hopefully McDaniels is a little bit more diplomatic than Gruden was. And just some of the stink, the rub off that he has coming from the Patriots, who are notoriously one of the least penalized teams in the league. Maybe that'll help us out a lot too.
One thing is absolutely true and 100% fact. Max Crosby is going to be held the shit out of next season. Whether they throw the flag or not is the only question. But he is going to, with that motor, how good he is, he's getting held a lot next season.
Yeah, I think now that you have somebody on the other side like a Chandler Jones, I think
you can't game plan purely around him.
Well, yeah, that too. And also, you know, you have a couple of very respected around the league. Not that Njoku, that's the freaking tight end.
Yannick Ngakoue.
Ngakoue. Gotcha. Look at my eyes, dude. I'm so fucking tired right now.
You look exhausted.
Yeah.
That keto diet's killing you. You need some carbs.
I need some carbs. I mean, I need some brain fuel, bro. I need some candy. I haven't eaten Skittles in 6 days, man.
My God, how are you alive?
Time for me. That's a long time for me. Skittles is my favorite candy, and that's a long time for me. I haven't had bread. I ate a hot dog with no bun. It fucking sucked. Oh, God damn.
I got a hot dog for you.
Yeah.
J.C. Hiles. Gruden played not to lose. McDaniels plays to win. I think we've both danced around this phrase without ever actually saying it. If you could describe the difference between the two the most, that might be the best way. I feel like Gruden gets yards. He gets into red zone, field goal range, gets super tiny, right? Puckers up that butthole. McDaniels is like, oh, red zone, we're getting it. We're going to kick this defense in the dick. Now it's the time to get after it. Well said, J.C. Hiles. Very well said.
Gruden's the type of guy that slows down at a stale green because it might turn yellow. That's the kind of guy Gruden is.
Yeah.
Because we talked about it. Once he hits the red zone, he thinks that as, I already have three. Anything I get on top of that is a bonus. So I'm just going to call very conservative plays. And if we get the seven, cool. If not, we still got the three.
Very fear-based play calling.
Yeah, man, he's very risk averse when it comes to the red zone. And I don't know, man. I never agreed with it. And hopefully that some of that stink has washed off Derek Carr. And you get to maybe be reckless by any means. I'm not saying that. But, you know, with the play call stuff being a little bit more throws. Because, I mean, honestly, how often did you see a throw from Gruden in the red zone go into the end zone? Not often. It was normally a guy catching the ball short and running into the end zone. Mm-hmm. So hopefully that changes, man.
After running between the tackles twice, predictably, and then third down, finally throwing something.
Yeah, why? Whatever it's called, two banana. I don't know what she's called.
Dead Raider. Rich Bisaccia did good because the roster was made. Rich deciding contracts and draft picks, staff hiring, etc., won't make everybody happy, and Rich didn't have the caliber to make those hard decisions.
That could have been part of it.
It could have been. Maybe.
A lot goes into being a head coach that, you know, not just X's and O's on the field.
That Rich has no experience of.
Yeah. And honestly, I don't know that. I really don't think that Mark Davis is in a position to kind of groom a head coach, a first-timer head coach. I don't think that's what he wanted.
Nor would we want that.
No. We wanted a guy that come in here that knows what he's doing, a guy that has, like we talked about, he's got a little bit of weight with the refs and around the league and with players, and you know, somebody that, not that Rich Bisaccia has a bad reputation at all, but as a head coach, as a guy who has been making big decisions in the game.
Well, that's it for us. Good show. Hit up a lot of stuff. Got out of here in under an hour. Ooh. Well done by us. Normally we talk way too much, and that's when we start going long.
We business, bro.
You and I.
Okay. Both.
I and you.
You got a mouse in that tank top or something?
Juan and RJ. Yeah. Don't be knocking the tank top. It's like 85 degrees still.
Dude, it's so tonight. Fucking hot. My neck is so hot. Soaked.
I was like, I shouldn't be wearing this hat because my brand new game day hat. And
I'm already I don't know why you're wearing it. Sweat. I don't know why you're wearing it. This one, all the ink is like bleeding through the top because I'm sweating through this motherfucker.
Yeah. So we're going to get out of here so we can take our clothes off. More vids to come. More shorts to come. You and Rory again handling post game duty this weekend because I'll be in Salt Lake City working.
Twerking.
And then we are just 24 days away.
Have fun with those 3% beers in Utah.
Oh my God! Luckily, you can find decent whiskey in Utah, but you're on a treasure trove. Like
if it's brewed beer, it's got to be that pee water.
It's bad. It's bad. So I'll find a way. I'll find a way to get in trouble in Utah of all places.
Very good.
But until then, knock on wood if you're with me.